Thank you. I greet each of you in the name of Jesus Christ. He mentioned the various challenges that we have in life, and indeed today I'd like to deal with a challenge that we are all facing to one degree or another. I have chosen a topic that I have never preached on before, one that I can't even recall ever hearing preached, but one that has been impressed upon my mind to talk about today. Temperance. Temperance is not one of those subjects that is heart-wrenching, soul-grabbing, blood-pumping. It's temperate. It's just not, doesn't stimulate the passion and the emotions that we often associate with a good sermon. But I think maybe it does. And so today I would like to discuss temperance. Paul, when he was writing to the Galatians, wrote about the fruits of the Spirit. He says in chapter 5 of Galatians, verse 22, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness." I think of those, but somehow I don't think of temperance. Against such, there is no law. It made it into Paul's top 9. Second Peter. Peter's writing, and he gives us a list. Chapter 1, verse 5. "And beside this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge, and to knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience, and to patience godliness, and to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness charity." We all know that charity, or love, as Paul mentions, has to be number 1. But here Peter puts it a number 5 in his list of priorities. Now, I don't know that the priorities are set that hard in these men's minds, but I want to emphasize the importance of temperance. So we're all on the same page. There in 1830s, in that era, there was a political movement, the temperance movement, and it dealt with the abstinence of alcoholic beverages. That is not what Peter and Paul were talking about when they were given this list. It may be included, but it wasn't their focus. What they were focusing on was moderation, restraint, self-control, auto-limiting. It in that concept, we can get the concept that, you know, that there in life there are some things that we are to do. In fact, in the bulletin, if you know to do good and you don't do it, that's sin. Okay, there are things that we are supposed to do, and there are things that we are not supposed to do. But temperance doesn't deal with either of those categories. It deals with a category of actions that fit in the middle. It's dealing with issues that we're to do some of, but not too much of. And how do we determine what's proper? That is this temperance. How do we get it? Well, Peter says, add to, you know, I think it says, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. He's saying, spend some effort at getting these qualities into your life, and temperance being one of them. So it's something that we have to make a conscious effort to get into our life. Moderation. Essentially what it's saying is, we have priorities in life. And what is your priorities? Matthew says you can't serve God and mammon. Christ said it. Matthew recorded it. But we have to choose one or the other. And if our focus is we are going to serve God, then that shifts all of our priorities to that one focus. And so everything has to be tempered to meet that goal. And so there's an incredible number of things out there in life that are buying for our time and effort and energies and monies and talents and all. But if we have a single focus on what is good, on Jesus Christ, then we temper everything to that one goal. Okay. Today I'm going to talk about a specific topic of where we need to focus temperance on. I want to start a new temperance movement. It's on digital technology. I'm going to quote from a Sherry Turkle. She's a professor at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She says, "Technology promises to give us or let us do anything from anywhere with anyone. But it also drains us as we try to do everything everywhere. We begin to feel overwhelmed and depleted by the lives technology makes possible. We may be free to work from anywhere, but we are also prone to be lonely everywhere." Now that's a broad brush. I want to get down into some of the specifics of what technology does. Before I go on, let me assure you that I know that I am not qualified to talk about this subject. I am one of those guys that has trouble rewinding my DVD so I can take it back to Blockbuster. You know, I am not technically literate. But this topic was given to me kind of in my face, and I had to deal with it. We had an issue in my business. You know, it's a small business. There are just a handful of us. We are kind of like family. But there became an issue with several of the staff members so that the jobs were not being done to their best abilities. And it all revolved around digital devices. And we talked about it. And we were all on the same page. We knew what needed to be done. But time went on and it wasn't done. No change was made. We talked about it. Yes, I'm going to do that. Or I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to cut down on that. But it didn't happen. Then one day I was listening to Christian radio and I heard an interview being done. And a man had written this book and I recognized his name. And so I kind of toned in. It was a man by the name of Archibald Hart. Archibald Hart and his daughter, Sylvia, wrote a book called The Digital Invasion, How Digital Technology is Shaping You and Your Relationships. I had read a number of his books way back in the 90s when I was trying to foster a child and I couldn't relate to her and what her needs were and why she did what she did and what I should do to help her and to help construct a good life for her. And I was lost. Archibald Hart is a psychologist. I believe it is a psychiatrist. I don't remember which he is. But in any event, he deals with helping us understand what's going on in our minds and in our emotions and how to orchestrate our lives in a godly way. He is very much a Christian. But what I liked about Archibald Hart's books were they were very practical. He gave you lists. He gave you bullet points that you could see and judge a person and see how their actions fit into this category. And no, it doesn't fit this category, but over in this, it does fit. And this is how you deal with that. And it was just very cookbook type, and that's what I needed. So much of what I will talk about today actually comes from some of the points that he makes. Right after that, I heard on a Christian radio a new preacher that I had never heard before, and he was talking about the evils of surfeiting. That's overindulging in food. I immediately did not like the man. And I know that I am walking on thin ice because this is potluck Sunday. But he did make some good points. He talked about, you know, we bow our heads and we say thanks and ask a blessing upon the food. We acknowledge that this is a blessing from God right at the very beginning. And then we raise our heads and we start filling our mouths, and we don't think about God again until we're done and we're over full and we throw the rest away. Is that giving respect to a blessing that God gave us? That's a soapbox, and I don't want to get off on that, especially on potluck Sunday. I am not a fool, but be careful what we eat. But the point of bringing this topic up today is because there is a comparison that I want to draw off of food and the digital technology. And so I would like to list a few comparisons. One is, there's good, essential aspects to both that are necessary for life. We cannot stop eating. We have to eat. And we can eat good quality, and we can affect our lives. The same with technology. We need technology. If it was done away, I dare say there would be some of us that would die. Because it involves every aspect of our life. But there is this good side of food, and there's this good side of technology. But too much is harmful. And we all know that we don't want to eat too much. And it can even be fatal. Going back to this preacher on the radio who was talking about food, I thought had some really good points, but then he ended up and just destroyed his whole sermon, in my opinion. He missed the point. He kind of concluded with the fact that, you know, if you're 5 pounds overweight, that's not a big deal. But you get to 10 pounds, a red flag ought to raise. You get to 15 pounds, and you've got a problem with surfeiting. What that man wanted to do was set guidelines so that he could judge you and me. He wanted us to be able to say, this is surfeiting, this is not. He wanted to make it black and white, and that's not true. I know lots of people that are 10 pounds underweight and surfeit. I know lots of people that are 40 pounds overweight and not. There are medical reasons, there's medications, there's all kinds of reasons that you can consume very little and be overweight, or that you can consume very much and be underweight. Weight doesn't have anything to do with surfeiting. The heart has something to do with surfeiting. It's because I put my peace, my comfort, my expectations all on food and not on God. I have cited my priorities to the wrong point. And that's why surfeiting is wrong. It is focusing on food, not on Jesus Christ. And so, I don't know how that has to do with anything here, but it was just a thought. But too much is harmful. Each of us must individually determine how much is needed, how much is too much, and then have the self-discipline to control the intake so that it focuses on what our life is to be all about. At some point in life, we may need to seek help to stop overindulgence. It's not easy to stop, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Now, so you know that I'm not coming down on your iPhones and your iPads and your computers and stuff, let's go through some of the benefits that those things have. One is, they are an immense source of information. The Bible talks about in the latter days that knowledge will abound. This digital technology has just made incredible amounts of information available to us. Two, it makes instant communication available where previously it wasn't available. Three, provides another means or method of teaching and learning. It's incredible technology that allows us to learn some things that were difficult in the past. It's a compact source of entertainment. And that's not all bad. But it can be, of course. It's a valuable means of record keeping. In my business, that is a critical aspect, is to keep the records of all my patients. And computer does it so much better than I was able to do it before. And it makes many tasks so incredibly fast, way faster than humans can do it. But there are the negative aspects. Aspects that will take our focus off of Jesus Christ and put them on ourselves or on some other lust. One, some of that information out there is wrong information. I'm sure each one of you have some type of an expertise that you have gone on the computer and been looking up some additional information and find things that are just blatantly wrong. Someone put it out there with an agenda and is misleading all kinds of people. Two, it allows communication to be too available, too superficial, too invasive, and sometimes inappropriate. And when we get to the inappropriate, that's evil. We know it. There's no temperance allowed. That's wrong. But other communications is good. And there we have to have our focus, our priorities set, so that we have the right amount. How can communication be too available? Communication is almost like anything else, supply and demand. If it's scarce, we value it. I remember a day when we were on a party line, there was only a house phone, you had to be in the house for someone to call you. Everybody else on the party had to be off the phone so that you could get the call, and you got the call, and there was you knew something important was going to be communicated. Today, we grab out our phones and we text something just real frivolous and send it on its way. The importance of what we communicate needs to be focused. It needs to be quality. It needs to be thought out. It needs to be good, solid communication. Anything else has a tendency to take us away from Jesus Christ. We all know that communication gets too invasive. First time I was in a bathroom, a public bathroom, and someone said, "Hello," I wanted to answer. You know, it follows us everywhere. It follows us into church. It follows us into bed. 3 o'clock in the morning, I get a text. Someone's wanting information. They could well have waited till the next day. And I'm sure they thought I would get it the next day. But it woke me out of sleep, so I had to wake up and read this text, and they were asking some crazy question about their pet that I took care of the following day. I've already talked about the inappropriateness. Three, it creates too many distractions and prevents or retards learning and teaching. A couple of stories. At one point, they did a research. They took, I think it was the top five students out of Stanford and some other college, and I can't remember what it was, and they gave them a list of things that they wanted them to do, all technical assignments, you know, email this, fax this, research this, Facebook this, you know, whatever the things were, they gave them this list of things, and they said, do it in this order. You will be timed, and you will be judged or graded according to how well you did it. They brought those same students back then later on and gave them the same list of things to do, but they told them this time, you do it however you want. You just multitask, you do it in any order, you do it simultaneously, however it works out best, so that you can do it the most accurate and the fastest, because we're grading you and we're timing you. When it was all done, they asked the students, okay, which one did you do the best on? Every student said, we did the best when we multitasked. Which one did you do it the fastest? Everyone said it was when they multitasked, they could do it much faster. The truth was, they made 33% more mistakes, and they did it slower when they multitasked. They did it much faster when they individualized the task. But they all thought they did better. There is this mental capacity. It's almost like people who are on drugs think they can't function well unless they're on the drug. It's self-deluding. And so distractions and multitasking do not work. There was another point that I wanted to bring up, but it's escaped me. But we all have seen our children or some child sitting in front of the TV with their laptop on their lap and their homework assignment on one half, their Facebook on the other half of the screen, earplugs in their ears so they're listening to their music. And they're trying to do homework? How much learning is going on? All these distractions keep us from learning. Four, much of the entertainment is inappropriate, addictive, and a poor stewardship of time. We already talked about being inappropriate. That's evil. That's sin. You don't do it. But I didn't realize until I was reading the book that many of our social... I know that the gaming is addictive. They rank addictions on a scale of 1 to 10. 10 being up there with cocaine and heroin and that type of stuff. I'm not sure where tobacco is. But they rated Facebook, even with tobacco use, as being addictive. There is a game, a video game out there that ranks 10 right up with heroin and cocaine as being addictive. You were born with a purpose. God created you and gave a task to you and only you. If you don't get it accomplished, it doesn't get done. How much time are we going to spend in the digital world wasting it? 2 hours a day? 4 hours a day? I'm not saying that we are wasting it all. But I think the average that I read for children between 13 and 19 is 8 hours a day on social networking. And I'm not coming down on the children, okay? Something that I read in the book is that our brains are being taught not to remember. We were taught to remember when I was going to school. Now, because of all this digital technology and stuff, our brains are automatically kicking out stuff and kicking out stuff and kicking out stuff. It's not important for me to remember. I just need to know where I have to go to get the information so I can retrieve it. And that's all that's necessary. And so we are training our brains to forget. And it happens to my age just as fast as it happens to the young. We clutter our lives with virtual relationships and withdraw from the complexness of face-to-face relationships. I wasn't aware of it. But we want to do things the easy way. It's just natural. If there's two ways of doing something, we choose the easier way. We do the same with our communications. The digital technology has made us so that we can communicate with just one sense, and that's our eyes. You don't have to hear, you don't have to feel, touch, you don't have any of the other senses that God has given us. We only have to use our eyes to communicate nowadays. And that has, it just makes it easier. There's not all this complicated emotional tugs and all the other things that go with communicating when we're just dealing with one sense. And so we tend to migrate to that. And we've all sat in a room or been at a table and you would like to say something to the other person, but the other person is texting and looking at their Facebook and they're doing all in their digital world, and so you can't talk to them because you feel like you're interrupting. God created us with five senses. He wants us to be in the moment, not on the Facebook. Not that Facebook's bad. There's a member of our church who has made a ministry out of Facebook. But her focus is on Jesus Christ. I can't fault her. She's not going to fit all these rules and regulations that I would like to I'm not going to try to force them, but because I'm not going to be the guy that says 10 pounds, a red flag should come up. But I want us to be focused on Jesus Christ with our internet use, our digital technology. It fills our lives to the point of sleep deprivation. When we fall asleep, our mind doesn't. It goes into action. And it takes all the things that took place that the day before and starts putting it in pockets here and there so that we can retrieve it. But we have a tendency to be on the Facebook late at night or doing other things late at night, and pretty soon we are so tired that our brain doesn't have time to process this stuff, and it is gone. That was what I was going to talk about earlier, and I just remembered. There was another study done where they brought a group of people in to a little room, and they taught them a song. They had like 5 minutes, and they taught them this song. And then they walked those people out of the room into a park. There was a beautiful setting of lake. And they spent 30 minutes just milling around this lake. And then they brought them back into the room and had them sing the song. They took another group of people and they taught them the same song for that same length of time. And they took them out the door, and this time it was in a manufacturing assembly line setting, and all the clanging and battering and just all the noise and the chaos went on. And they did that for 30 minutes, brought them back into the room and asked them to sing the song. And they had no clue of what the song was. It was gone. Because they had filled their mind with things that interfered with processing. We need to get our sleep. Other aspects. Number 7. There is an emotional contagion that is transmitted through social networking. A research showed that if you have a friend on Facebook who is lonely, you have a 52% greater chance of becoming lonely. If that friend is angry, you have a 52% chance greater of becoming angry. It's just contagious. The surprising thing is, if your friend is not lonely, but tells you about their friend who is lonely, you have a 25% chance of, or increased chance of becoming lonely. If it's your friend's friend's friends and down the line, but they tell you about it, and you have no relationship to them, it's a 15% chance. There is this contagion that goes through social networking. 8. Much of the social networking is highly addictive and can become inappropriate and can cause marriage problems. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory. 9. causes reduced physical activity, increasing health risks such as obesity, diabetes, and all. And that's pretty explanatory. 10, can cause dissatisfaction with our real world since it can't keep pace with our virtual one. It's called Facebook facade. I hadn't heard that, but that's what they call it. You get on the Facebook and you create a profile of who you are and you tell the world about all the good things of your life. Someone else sees that. Their life doesn't measure up. And they feel like life is passing them by. And they become depressed. And depression is skyrocketing in our society. Those first 10 weren't bad enough. These last two are devastating. They have found that too much digital technology actually retards our brain's development in reasoning, creativity, attention span, memory, and the emotions of empathy and compassion. For the last 5-10 years, I have noticed something in my office. I have an increasing number of clients that bring their pet to me and pay me good money to find out what's wrong with them and to tell them what they can do about it. And I am standing there talking to them after examining the pet, and I know those people aren't receiving anything. They're not there. They're just gone. And I have misdiagnosed it. I had thought that we had this incredible drug problem in Lexington. Or maybe something was in the water. I think they're on the digital devices so much that they are thinking about that. I leave that exam room and I tell my staff, write down everything because they're going to be calling back because they didn't get a thing I said to them. You can just see it. Their attention span has been wiped out. And these are, some of them are elderly women. Some of them, most of my clients are women just because that's who brings the pets in. But it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't have to be the young girls. All ages are affected. Our minds, God created, but we need to have things in priority and limited. There needs to be temperance. It needs to be focused on God. This last one, I've underlined. It interferes with our brain's ability to form attachments with others, including God. It reduces our ability to be reflective, meditative, or contemplative. There is a God spot in our brains. It sits on the right side, about 2 inches or 3 inches above your ear, just right up in here. Researchers can, over and over, anybody that's religious, you don't have to be Christian, you don't have to be Muslim, any religion. If you are religious, there is a credible change in that portion of the brain. Those who are antagonistic to religion say, yeah, but it's a reduction in activity. It's not an increase in activity. And that's true. And so they did some studies on people that have had that part of the brain damaged. It should not have been called the God spot. It is the selfish spot. It is where people that have been damaged, you cannot make them self-centered. They are focused on everybody else. That's what religion does to us. It focuses us on Jesus Christ. And it takes the focus off of us. Internet, the digital technology, causes incredible activity in our God spot. They can measure it. It's known. Now, just so you know, there are lots of spots in our brain that become active when we are in religious activities. God didn't put all of his eggs in one basket. So damaging one part of the brain doesn't keep you from becoming religious and being drawn to him. But that one spot should have been called the selfish spot, becomes incredibly motivated with the digital technology. What can we do? And I'm running out of time. We can no more eliminate digital technology than we can food. So what are we going to do? We're going to have to set some guidelines. We need to have some accountability. We need to work together as a body to focus on Jesus Christ and help one another to do that. There are some rules of, they call netiquette. It's just being rules that you should follow no matter who you are on the internet or on the digital technology. And I'm going to go through them because I think they're of value. Be polite and respectful at all times. Now, there's no place that has this list. I have altered lists and made them more suitable for this setting. Okay. Never use all caps, as it is considered shouting. Be honest in your profiles, but reveal only what is appropriate for everyone. Okay? I think that's self-explanatory. Don't do or say anything online that you cannot share with God. You are never anonymous. Never follow spam or pop-ups. Be proper with well-thought-out quality communications that you put out there. You never know when sometime you're going to want to get a job and your prospective employer may go to your Facebook account and look and see what's on there to see what type of quality person you are. Don't network late at night. And silence devices in public auditoriums. And when in church, realize you are in God's house. So be respectful with him or of him. Okay. Those are some hard rules that everyone should follow. I'm going to give you a list now of some things that I would like for you to consider. It won't fit everybody. It's not, we all don't have the same jobs, we don't all have the same capacities to engage into this digital world, or call to engage into this digital world. So what I say here, I'm not saying everybody has to fit into, but these are some guidelines to consider. Don't use digital gadgetry until after your morning devotion. God wants the first fruits of our lives. He doesn't want what's left over. So don't immediately grab up your phone in the morning to see what communication came in during the night. Get on your knees. Open the scriptures. Then begin your day. Stop using it by 9 o'clock in the evening. Much of the stuff that is inappropriate takes place at night. But that's not the only reason. It's just your mind, your brain needs some downtime, some unplugged time, and then it needs to sleep. And so it's common sense to limit it at night. Have a 24-hour fast once a week, Sunday if possible. I wouldn't push that, except that I think it's critically important. Why? Not so that you can say you fast from the digital technology and get points with God. But we didn't know that my staff had an addiction to the internet or to the digital tech device that they were holding until we talked about it, and they couldn't quit it. You don't know if you're addicted to it until it's gone. If you can't go 24 hours and not be craving to get back on it and find out what's going on, there may be a problem. The author of this book, Archibald Hart, said that he was in the digital world because of his job. He loved it because of his grandkids. They had a windstorm, and it took out their electricity. And he said, as a psychologist, he was out for over a week. He went through all the stages, or I won't say all the stages, but he recognized in himself that he was going through the stages of a drug withdrawal. He was addicted. And that's what stimulated him to write the book, is that he had a problem that he didn't know he even had. And he's an expert. 24-hour fast will tell you. And it'll also help you keep from forming those addictions. No digital use during mealtime when face-to-face conversation is available to you. Set a priority of talking to the person you're with. Now, if emergencies or whatever, these are ideas to consider. So I'm not going to say never. But every time you get a chance, be in the moment. Check your emails, texts, and other digital communications no more than once an hour. I think the average is about every 8 minutes. Be intentional in developing face-to-face relationships and limit virtual ones. Practice being present in the moment. Yeah. Don't allow virtual life to reduce real life sleep, especially with children. Okay. Have plenty of unplugged downtime. I think we've already covered all that. Be open and honest with your use and needs. Don't allow embarrassment to keep you from getting help. And in fact, I would recommend you be proactive in getting help. And I'm going to talk about that in just a little bit, even though I'm running out of time. But there are all kinds of ways that you can get outside help to be focused and set your priorities. And we'll discuss that. Make the home a digital safe haven for the whole family. Many accountability reports and filters are available for parents and for adults, and that's what I will be talking about a little bit. Set an example by staying within the family guidelines and being accountable to another adult. A lot of this is kind of duplicating a little bit because I do have, I think, a significant benefit. Pray daily for God's hand of guidance in our virtual life. That's the only way you're going to keep your priorities right. Adult accountabilities will help. But if you pray about it, it's going to help significantly to keep you from being like Ananias and Sapphira, lying to the Holy Spirit about your digital life. Protect your spiritual time and relationship with God, and commit all digital experience to be edifying and to the glory of God. Now I would like to turn to Ephesians, the 5th chapter. I'm going to read a fairly significant amount, beginning with verse 6. Let no man deceive you with vain words. And that's what superficial communication is vain words. For because of these things, and we all know that Paul wasn't dealing with digital technology back then, but it is pertinent to our circumstance. For because of these things cometh the wrath of God unto the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. And then in parentheses, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. Providing what is acceptable unto the Lord. That is kind of our whole task of life, is finding out what God's will is, what is pleasing to God, and then doing it. If that is your focus, and you do this, It's going to keep the digital technology under wraps and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame to even speak of those things which are done of them in secret. That is the inappropriate stuff. That is just taboo. It's sin. Don't do it. If you have problems with it, get help immediately. Don't think you can do it on your own. But there are these other areas that also need to be brought to light. I don't think Paul is talking about it being evil or good when he's talking about light and dark here. I think he's talking about it being in secret or in the open. Let everything be in the open. We can sit face to face, 2 feet apart, and I not know what you're hearing because you've got earphones in. I not know what you're seeing because you've got your laptop face to you. There is secrecy everywhere available to us. We choose whether we want to be open or closed, light or darkness. But all things are reproved, but all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatsoever doth make manifest is light. Wherefore he saith, awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. If they were evil in Paul's day to the Ephesians, they're not any better today. Maybe more sophisticated, but no more, no better. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit. And here he talks about keeping your God space free. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. And then he puts a phrase here that I want to talk about. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. And I apologize to the ministry because we've gone through this. But I had not considered what is the mechanics of submitting yourselves one to another. There's a front between my brother and I. And he comes and says, Donnie, you did this. You need to do that. I say, I submit. I'll do it. That's me submitting to Jim. But it's saying submitting yourselves one to another. So now, what is Jim's responsibility? No, I didn't mean it. I was just wanting to let you know, and it's not important. You don't have to change. No, we didn't get anywhere with that. That is not what he's talking about, submitting one to another. When Paul was on this earth, he built tents. Tents allow you no privacy. You know what's going on the other side of the tent. Just, you can hear everything. In fact, you can't tell a secret inside of a tent because you can hear it on the outside of the tent. There were no secrets. And so, if you're submitting one to another, you're accountable to one another. And if I tell a secret and my brother hears it, he comes to me and says, you shouldn't do that. And I submit. If he does something, I go to him and he submits to me. That's submitting one to another. We are accountable one to another. Romans 12, verse 2. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That is our goal. And we want to submit to ourselves, to one another, so that we get to that perfect will of God in our lives. I talked to you about that there is many different devices out there that you can put on your digital devices that make you be open In fact, the ministry met this last month, and we are studying ways that we can be accountable with our digital devices to one another. Voluntary is not mandatory. It's not to police. Just like when we go downstairs to eat, I'm not going to be policing what you eat. That is not what this is about. This is about helping one another be temperate in all things. Because that is our task, is to focus on Jesus Christ. But get on the internet and find some of those devices. There are some that cost money. I've lost the name of them. Covenant Eyes is one. There's a canine web protection that's free. There's Microsoft has some that you can, I think it's called Family Safety or something to that effect. But there's a number of them out there that you can put on your device, and then you can give an email to someone that you want to monitor, to be accountable to. And I can put on mine that Jim Case is supposed to receive a weekly report, and it will red flag anything that I look up that is questionable. Now, he may come to me and say, what did you do last Friday night? What website was it I on? And he can tell me. And I say, well, I had a pet that had a problem. And I looked up on some medical information. That red flagged it. So there may be some legitimate red flags. But if Friday night I'm doing something that's inappropriate, and he comes to me, I'm called into account. And I can deal with it right there. And so that it doesn't cost me the life of my soul. I can get down and repent. Because I've been called to judgment. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. I'm going to stop there. This sermon was given to me, and it wasn't easy, but I thought I had conquered it. Until I read this, and I looked at my life, and I realized that what this temperance is setting priorities for my life. Today I've talked about digital technology being out of my priority. But there are a host of other things in my life that are out of priority. I have not set my life like Paul did, like a flint for the mastery. We are all going to be called to stand before the judgment bar of God. Were my priorities right? Or did I try to serve mammon? Only you know what's going on in your life. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainty, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. That potential exists for every one of us. Probably not the right time to tell it, but a little humorous story that took place in Moody Institute, Bible Institute. It was at the end of the year, and the students were allowed just to randomly ask questions about life. And the old professor was standing up there, and one man or boy, student, raised his hand, and he called on him, and he said, "Have a question?" And he said, "Yeah. At what age does God or Satan stop tempting you with lust?" And the old professor said, "Well, son, I can't rightly answer that, but it's sometime after 84. We all have the potential of falling. It says, "Take he that thinketh he stand, take heed lest he fall." None of us are immune from the temptations of Satan. And we need each other. We need to be accountable to one another. We need to be in the light. Because we are going to stand before God. And on the other side, I want each of you to be there. And I want to be there. So I pray that God will help each one of us be temperate in our lives.